Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. The number to call is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment to our guest. However, we ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour, 9 or 10 o'clock news. That way that gives us time to really set the scene here and get to know our commissioners and exactly what's going on. It is the final Tuesday of the month, and it means Josephine County Commissioners are in studio today. We have all three here. Welcome, County Commissioners. And I'm going to throw the new guy under the bus. First of all, Andreas Bleck, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio.
Thank you. Good morning, Chuck.
Did I get the name right?
Andreas Bleck, yeah.
Okay. Welcome. Have the other commissioners been good to you so far?
So far, I think they know that I bruise easily, so they need to be careful.
All right. How has your experience been so far, just coming in as a brand new commissioner in the midst of everything?
So I've been on the job now for about a month. Lots of things to learn. I've been involved in local politics for quite some time, but it's quite different than just observing from the outside as opposed to being on the inside and dealing with the day-to-day issues that are concerning the county.
All right. Have they delegated or thrown you onto the bus for any particular areas of responsibility yet?
Little responsibilities here and there, but for the most part, I'm doing a lot of reading, a lot of research, trying to understand what's been happening with the previous commissioner and what's been happening with county business and just trying to get up to speed with what's going on.
All right. Well, once again, welcome to the board here.
Thank you.
Now we'll throw the other guys under the bus here. Let's see. Commission Chair John West, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio, John. Constituents, what are you dealing with right now?
Well, we're continuing to look at the taxpayers' business. We're trying to save money for the taxpayers in every avenue we can, and we're looking at a motor pool, county motor pool. We think we can save a whole lot of money condensing. We have, 265 to 300 vehicles. We got vehicles that only travel 1,000 miles a year. So we're going to go to this motor pool, go to a county pool where they check a vehicle out. You know, at $50,000 a vehicle, doesn't take very many vehicles to equal savings of hundreds of thousands of dollars. And also the insurance, the maintenance money, all that. So we see contraction coming. It's still happening from last year, and we're not going to wait for it to hiss in between the ice. We're going to get ahead of the game when we're going to be fiscally responsible, and that's what we're doing. So I would say buckle up.
All right. Thank you, John. All right. Mr. Bartshaker, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio once again. Glad to have you back here again with us. What are you dealing with right now?
Well, first of all, I'm glad you're only throwing me under the bus. There's a lot of people who like to throw me under the steamroller. But anyways, I would say hot topic right now is this fire map.
That was going to be my first question today.
The fire map in the process. We had a meeting yesterday. And it's apparent that we have a bunch of Gen X's or Gen Z's people working behind a computer trying to figure this all out and paint us all with a wide brush. And it's just the methodology is not good. And I think the results of this map, once it's implemented, I think the people that live in the areas that are affected by the map are going to get hit in the pocketbook. I mean, that's the long and the short of it, Chuck. This is what really upsets me. And I look at it probably through a different colored lens because of my background in wildland firefighting and an instructor in wildland fire science. Once I get this map done, what will we know now that we didn't know before the map as a fire manager? Nothing. Nothing. So what is the real purpose behind this?
That was going to be my question. What's the purpose behind it as far as you're concerned?
What I think from my my years in the Senate, understand how the legislature works, understand how ways and means and understand the different agendas that are up at the Capitol. Currently, large fire costs are paid by the large landowners and the general fund of the state of Oregon. There's also an insurance policy in there from Lloyd's and London's, but the premium is paid by the large landowners. these people own millions of acres in Oregon, and they're charging assessment, so that's why they pay the lion's share of this. I think the object of this is to create this map, reevaluate, reassess the people that live in these areas, and try to offset the large landowners' fire costs and try to get the general fund out of paying for wildfires. That way it frees up general fund money to go use on other programs. Remember, general fund money is what the legislature can willy-nilly just do whatever they want. And there's a lot of general fund money in large fire costs. If they can free that up, then they got money to do something else. So I think the long and short of it is to try to redistribute how fire is paid for in the state of Oregon. That's what I'm seeing.
All right. Who will this map affect? Can you get?
I think it'd be easier to say who will this map not affect. Okay, it's anybody that lives in an environment or adjacent to an environment that could be affected by wildfire.
All right. So if you live outside of the city limits, basically everybody living outside the city limits, or does it include within the city limits?
Well, it can include in the city limits. Depends where those subdivisions are. If they're adjacent to the WUI, to a wildland fire environment, those first few blocks in the city, we've seen this in many cities. Paradise, that's one that comes up. That was something that has happened fairly recently. We've seen whole communities. But, you know, this goes back. We've seen communities in the late 1800s when you talk about the wildfires in northern Minnesota and Michigan and Maine and stuff like that that wiped out entire towns. So this is – they keep wanting to try to tell us that this is all new. It's not new. When you look at large fire history going back to 1910, the Great Fires of 1910, they were not just in Idaho, Washington, Montana. That's kind of where the focus when we talk about the Great Fires of 1910. If you look at the 1910 fire season as a whole, the whole western United States really had a tough fire season, including Oregon. We had here in Oregon, of course, we had the Tillamook fires. That was a series of fires in the 1930s and the 1940s. And it affected the coastal range, which you would never think could burn. And it was old growth forest that burnt in the Tillamook fires. So they're trying to spin it that this is new. Okay. Of course, the climate change discussion. In fact, I noticed with the guy giving the presentation for Oregon State University, in wildland fire, we have the wildland fire triangle. And what that is that's weather, topography, and fuels. Those are the three things that drive a fire across the landscape. They've added a fourth one, climate. So now it's climate, weather, topography, and fuels. And I asked him, why do you put climate in there? Did climate have something to do with the fires in 1910 or the ones in the 1800s? Was that climate? So they're changing the conversation. They're trying to interject these political talking points, but at the end of the day, what they're after is how we pay for fire in Oregon. And again, like everything else, it always seems it's on the back of the middle class, if you really think of it. It's always on the back. So the very wealthy, they have the ability to lobby with their money legislators to get what they want. And that's what happens. But that's what I think is going to happen. It's going to be a slow progress over the next decade. But at the end of the day, people that are living in rural Oregon are going to see some additional cost. That's what I predict.
All right. Where are those costs coming from? Is it coming from the government? Is it coming from insurance? What is the bottom line here?
It'll probably come from assessments for paying for fire. The insurance companies, if they do like they did in California, anybody that lives in we call it the WUI. It's where you're exposed to wildland fire. In California, the insurance costs have went through the ceiling. In fact, now they got a pool that if you can't get insurance, you can go into this pool, but it's pretty expensive. So, some of those costs are up over 300%. But I predict that's coming to Oregon. It won't come next week. This is how they do things. It's a slow drip, 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 drip. And over a decade, fast forward a decade, then look where you were 10 years ago. That's where you'll see the difference. We've already changed the building codes. We've already done some things like that. It's going to make it more expensive. It's going to limit what kind of homes you can build, where you can build them. That's already done. That's already baked in the cake. So, you know, if you bought a 40 acres 20 years ago and you say, when I retire, I'm moving to Oregon or I'm moving to my 40 acres and building a log cabin, guess what? As long as the logs are made out of concrete.
Oh, golly. Yeah. All right. So if I have – here's a hypothetical. All right. I live in the county. I've got a five-acre plot out there, stick-built house on it. I'm butted up against BLM land. What are my costs going to go up? My insurance costs are going to go up, certainly.
You may even not be able to get insurance. I don't know. I don't want to put that threat out there, but that's what happened to California, whether it happens to Oregon or not. But if you look at – it seems like we adopt these policies from California and rubber stamp them in Oregon. But anyways, I will tell you, things will change if you live in those areas, and they will affect your pocketbook in the future. I almost guarantee it.
All right. I live out there right – once again, hypothetical. I live out there right now. What do I do to defend myself, my property, and my pocketbook?
I get a hold of your state representatives because this is all legislator-driven. And so get a hold of, you know, in this area, it'd be Art Robinson or Dwayne Yonker. Get a hold of them and say, I don't like this. Do something about it. That's their job. So I think when they pass Senate Bill 762, I don't think those legislators really had a good understanding what they're voting. Because a lot of Republicans voted for that. And a lot of those Republican districts are going to get adversely hurt by this.
Let's, all right. What was the result of yesterday's meeting that was held at the Ambassador? How well was it attended? What happened? What did people see?
Well, we had about 100 people in the audience, but they couldn't interact. It was county commissioners only. What it was check the box. So the state can say, we've went and talked to county commissioners. We got input from people. We got this. We did that. We've had our meetings and everything. It's check the box. I don't think it's going to change much. I mean, there's a big argument right now going over irrigated lands. So farmlands that are irrigated and everything. And they say, well, you know, they're adjacent to wild lands, so they could be, you know, In our business, they could be exposed to firebrands, okay? So, you know, firebrands coming off of a fire could land in these areas. The problem is there's two sides of that equation, the firebrand equation, because things can spot out a mile or more. But there's two parts. You have to have the firebrands, and you have to have the receptors. And you don't have that many receptors in irrigated farmland. So they keep saying, oh, they could be exposed to firebrands. What they're not saying is there's no receptors. If there's no receptors, there's no fires. Okay. So we're making a little progress on the irrigated farmlands, and we're going to keep pushing on that to at least get them kicked out because it makes no sense. But you got to remember, when you kick those properties out, those properties won't pay an assessment.
All right. So that spreads the assessment out elsewhere. Okay. All right. Listen, thank you very much, Herman. But John and Andreas, didn't mean to leave you two out of that that discussion. By all means, jump in.
So I'll jump right in with that. I asked the citizens, how much do you think OSU is getting paid for this study and everything they're doing? Do you think they're doing it for free? And the governor said, the governor set these four criterias. What does she know about wildfires? And so in that one meeting with OSU, they talked about ember fallout. If you're within a mile and a half, look at Grants Pass. It's in the high end, the extreme. And so if I got a 40-mile-an-hour wind, no wildfire, my barbecue catches the side of my house on fire, and it gets the fence on fire, and the wind blows it, how many houses do you think are going to burn down? Has nothing to do with wildfire. I mean, let's get real. Has zero to do with it. So, you know, they talk about, you know, how many times in our last 100 years have we seen towns burn down because of wildfires? Phoenix Talent, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that was a wind-driven fire, and it was, I think it was arson set, wasn't it?
As I recall.
Yeah. So what did that have to do with wildfire? But it, we're going to, they put that in the illustration. And so, you know, this whole thing, I'm with the commissioner. This is a land grab, control, money. People are not going to be happy when this comes about. I think that this could spark one of the biggest lawsuits you've seen in a long time.
All right. Something to watch here, and we'll continue to watch. But first of all, we're going to listen. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. County Commissioners are in studio, and John West just made a point here about that virtual meeting yesterday in the Ambassador Auditorium. That was actually statewide. And, John, what'd you say about the other county commissioners?
So there was – most counties were represented by county commissioners, and I would say that 99% of the county commissioners said the same scenario. They said the same thing. They were on the same page. This whole map is a farce. The whole thing's set up wrong. There's no the scientific studies, Montana studies that they've got. All this is bogus. One lady, it was really amusing. She says, "We got this parcel, and you got it in the high, but 99 or 95% of the parcel is a lake." She said, "How's the parcel in the high?" And they said, "Well, we know there's all that water, but you know, they come up with just no reason. Their reasoning is not even, you know, it makes no sense. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen."
All right. So the key is revoking that measure.
Well, yeah, it's got to go through the legislature, though.
Mm-hmm, right.
And so you have to talk to – you know, interesting, yesterday when the first question I asked a presenter from Oregon State University who does all the computer models, my first question was, how many years' experience do you have fighting wildland fire?
Zero.
Zero. But yet this – he says, my team. Well – you know, if
they're student researchers,
yeah, that's what they are. Yeah. They're Gen Z, and they got their nose in a computer all the time, and that's not how it works. You have to take computer modeling for wildland fire spread, and you have to, and whether you use Behave, there's lots of different programs. You put all the ingredients in there, you push the button, the computer tells you what should happen, but that's not the end of it. The next part is, you go out to the field and see what that is. That what's happening? So you have to verify what the computer says. Because if you put the wrong ingredients in, what's happening out on the ground is going to be different. So there's no verification on this. This is nuts. It's absolutely nuts, Chuck.
All right, crazy. Mr. Bleck, you want to weigh in, or?
Well, I was just going to comment that this is not my bailiwick. I don't have wildfire experience like my colleagues do right here. But what really stood out to me is looking at the wildfire risk map was that they said that they were concerned with weather, climate, fuels, and geography or topography. And I saw a lot of places on the wildfire risk map where lines were drawn straight. And I found that really interesting, that I know nature doesn't do anything in a straight line. So even though they said that's the criteria that they use to measure the risk of these parcels or tax lots, how did they come up with lines? And that just stood out to me as being kind of strange. And the whole methodology that they used, again, like I said, I don't have any experience with wildfire, but looking at when people are looking at data and making decisions from that data, it just appeared to me that it was pre-decided, and they used just the methodology that just didn't seem right to me.
All right, straight lines through the topography. Okay, well, once again, that's easy to do in a classroom. All right.
Yep.
All right, gentlemen, interesting. This is going to be ongoing, so we're going to be watching this for a long, long time, I'm afraid. And once again, we've told people what they need to do is contact your legislators and let them know exactly how you feel and where your vote's going if they don't do something. That's the power that the people have out there. and you can lobby them all you want. In the meantime, other areas that you're dealing with right now, John, you mentioned earlier budget, and we know that the county is strapped, and there's probably a contraction going on within the county. How bad is that? How long is it going to last? Look in your crystal ball here and say what you're dealing with on a daily basis.
So how long is it going to last? I think we're in for a longer haul than most people think. When you're $35 trillion in debt and you're spending over $1 trillion in interest, the state's having financial troubles. ODOT's $354 million in the red. I mean, come on. We're seeing different monies disappear for different departments. And we hear it from every department. Oh, we've been getting notice, you know, they probably won't have the money next year that we got this year and certain things. So we're just, you know, it's not that we're not always doing it. We're just going probably at a quicker speed. We see it coming down the pike faster. So we're looking at every single thing in the county on how to save money.
All right. You said you're trying to get ahead of it. Is it possible to get ahead of it right now? Are we even staying even with it?
We cut, what, $11 million out of last year's budget?
No, we didn't cut. Somebody else cut it. We're $11 million less revenue.
You have $11 million less to spend. Yeah. Is that what I'm hearing?
And try to do the same services.
So our budget went down $11 million.
Okay? I see.
So, the budget went down. So I thank you for correcting me on that. But still, you know, we're seeing everything tighten up, and we're trying to make sure that you have police and you have fire and you have all the departments and everything, and you get the service from the county, and we're trying to make it last and go as far as we can. And you know, it's, if you don't have to have it, we're looking at cutting it out.
All right. Thank you very much. Stay tuned. News is coming up here on KAJO Radio. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show. Welcome back, everyone. Glad to have you with us. This is the Tuesday Talk Show, second half. The number to call if you have a question or comment for our guest is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you hear your question or comment directly to them. We do have a caller holding on right now. So with the county commissioners in studio and someone on the phone, so let's say good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for our guests?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Do you have a question?
Oh, yeah, I do have a question for the commissioners. I received a text message from the county fire. Sam Lashley with the Oregon State Fire Marshal, and they want to do some kind of check around my house. With all the scams going on around today, do you know if this is for real?
Gentlemen.
No, nothing about it.
And nothing about, they want to do some kind of FireWise check around my house. And do you think that's a scam?
Well, if it's a FireWise program, we have a FireWise program, but I don't know, when you said State Fire Marshal and FireWise, we have a FireWise program. I don't know what the State Fire Marshal is doing.
And it came from the State Fire Marshal, ma'am?
Gosh, I wish I could put you guys on speaker.
I would want to know who the fire marshal is, their credentials, their name, so you could check them out and make sure that they're actually a fire marshal.
It says, hello, this is Sam Lashley with Oregon State Fire Marshal, calling to schedule a defensible space assessment. Does that sound...
Well, call the number and see what you get.
Okay, well, I just want to know if I call that number, am I getting somebody that is real or a fake number?
Yeah, I would actually call the state fire marshal in Salem and say, hey, this person called me wanting to come on my property, and I want to know, that way you're not just taking it from that number, that person. You're calling the state's fire marshal's office up in Salem.
I've done that.
Yeah.
I've left them a message, but they don't have anybody there you can talk to in person. Like, I can talk to you guys in person, which is nice.
Well, you can always call the Rural Metro office. You have a fire marshal down there, and just say, hey, why is this person wanting to come onto my property to do an assessment, and just see what they say.
Okay.
Or you could call our emergency management department, and they handle our FireWise program. That's where I would start. I'd start with the county emergency management department and get a hold of Mike McLaughlin.
Mm-hmm. And who's that?
That would be Mike McLaughlin at the Josephine County.
Not Mike, the other Mike?
Mike McLaughlin. Yep.
Okay. All righty, guys.
Thank you.
Good to hear you on the air.
All right. Thank you for your call, man. We appreciate it. All right. Once again, number to call, 541-472-1270 if you have a question or a comment for a guest. And we'll put you on the air live. In the meantime, we're starting to delve into the budget a little bit when we had about 2 minutes left in the program as we're looking ahead. And we nailed down that we're $11 million short on our budget, and we've already had to adjust our budget because you have to have a balanced budget, do you not?
That's correct. So a couple facts. 86% of all the money that comes into Josephine County are through grants. So if a grant disappears or is not renewed, the program disappears. Most people don't realize in Josephine County that when they pay their taxes on their property, very small portion of that goes to Josephine County. You know, look at your tax bill. Most of it is going to the school districts. You take all the property taxes that go to Josephine County, it brings in a little over $5.5 million. That's it. $5.5 million out of property taxes. And people, you know, they complain about, how expensive their property taxes are. Look at your tax bill. It will tell you where your taxes are going.
All right. Yeah, it's itemized there. And you'll be amazed at how many people dip into that and how little of that, 58 cents per thousand that we're talking about goes into county coffers.
Yep.
A small percentage.
Yep. And then people expect us to fund all these programs. We can't possibly fund them without the grant money. And if the grant money goes away, the program goes away.
All right. I keep hearing grants, and I hear about grant writers. Can we improve our situation on the grant scene by improving our grant writing or our searching out for these monies?
Well, if the grants aren't available, they're not available. It has nothing to do with our grant writers. They're just not available, okay, because they come from the state or they come through the federal government, or most of the time the federal money comes through the state to the counties. But it's all grants.
All right, there you have it. We have another caller standing by. Let's say good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for our guest today?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. A couple of things. Number one is I'm retired. I've been retired for over 20 years, and I don't get any increases. I'm living on a fixed income. And I get on the radio, and I get my thoughts confused. Anyway.
Me too, sir.
I live down in Wilderville, and you know we got plenty of trees. Recently, my insurance company, my homeowner's insurance company, canceled me. I went shopping around on the phone, a couple of different companies, and they're all 100%, 100% higher. That's a serious problem for me, as I said, living on a fixed income. I haven't had a raise, as I said, for well over 20 years now. By the way, I want to inject another item on my mind here, too, directed to Mr. West. I don't know of anybody that would vote for a recall, so as far as I'm concerned, you're safe. And thank you for your efforts to keep our expenses down on programs that are spending money foolishly, because our government has a way of spending money foolishly, and I can't afford that. What was the other thought I had? The answer to the question of why they're doing this is obvious to me. First and foremost is money, and of course that's driven by politics. Anyway, the whole situation with my homeowner's policy and my fire insurance is incomprehensible. I just don't get it. It's a disaster for me. And if you have comments, I'll just take them over the air. Thank you, gentlemen, and good luck to you all. Bye.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, sir. Let me echo another thought there with the gentleman pointing out that he can't afford any more increases. The insurance is gone right now. Can't find anything that he can afford. Is the idea to move people out of the country and into the cities, is that ultimately what we're talking about?
That's been the idea from the green community for decades. Going back to the 70s when I was studying environmental studies in college, that was one of the big things, is to condense people into cities and get them out of the countries. But the story you just heard is the same story that we've been hearing out of California the last few years. And now we're hearing it in Oregon. You starting to see what I'm saying? I know some people live down around Placerville, California, and their homeowner's insurance was like $500. Then all of a sudden, they got put into these extreme wildland fire stuff, designated. And even though the fire department lives just several blocks from their home, they couldn't get insurance, had to go on the pool, and then I think they said it was like $2,700.
Wow. Okay.
So what we just heard on the phone is what we've been hearing from California in the last few years.
All right. John, looked like you were about ready to jump right in.
Well, coming here to the radio show this morning, I had a citizen of Josephine County call me and said, Commissioner, man, we're struggling here. Allstate's counseling insurance, this insurance company. And he said, I'm just so thankful. I found Travelers Insurance and I've got this 1,200 square foot house and I don't have much. And Travelers Insurance said they do it for $1,500 a year. And I said, well, what did you used to pay? $450. And he's just happy to have insurance. But he says, I don't know if I can afford it, but at least I got insurance. I mean, this is what you hear day in and day out. And the state says, oh, this had nothing to, you know, the insurance companies didn't look at this. Are you serious? This map is everywhere. You don't think the insurance companies looked at this fire map saying, holy, even the state says that everybody's in an extreme and high risk. So,
all right. Are the insurance companies lobbying the legislature in order to get this map out there to increase rates? Is this price gouging or is this a fair assessment?
I would say that's a question mark.
Nobody's going to jump in on that one, huh?
Well, if you don't have the evidence to prove it, yeah. But I would say that's a question mark.
Okay. All right. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO, ladies and gentlemen. Number to call, 541-472-1270, and we'll put you on the air live. But we ask that you indulge us now with your ears and listen closely, please. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Number to call, 541-472-1270. County commissioners are in studio. Now, let me throw another one by you here, and this might be just more informational, but it's something that appears to be affecting certainly areas of Grants Pass and the surrounding areas and certainly this radio station, and that specific power outages. Do we have any comment on those? Are those planned? Are those rolling outages to protect Pacific Power? Or is it really animals getting into their stuff?
Yeah, you know, I don't know all that, but I would say get used to it. As a guy that spends time in other countries that have, they call it grid shedding, you know, they just get used to it. That you're out of power for 6 hours every day or 3 days a week or something like that. Load shedding, that's the word they use. I anticipate that coming to the United States. When you keep hearing the experts saying that the grid is maxed out, but yet we keep putting more demand on the grid. So what does that tell you? I mean, if it's maxed out or close to maxed out, but yet we're putting more demand, you're going to be just like these other countries. You're going to have load shedding where they turn off certain parts of the grid to divert the electricity to other parts, and it kind of changes.
Is that what's happening here?
They don't say that yet, but it sure looks familiar to what I've experienced in other countries.
It's good for the generator business.
Well, there is that. There is that. Let's see. I think we had a call come in. Let me see. Good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for our guests?
I sure do. Is this a product of our governor, Tina DeKotex, or is it the one who's pulling the strings below her?
Oh, be a little more clear, sir.
Well, you know, what politics can get kind of dirty when there's some kind of someone pulling the string, some significant underlying unregistered lobbyist performing undercover sexual influence on the governor. It kind of concerns me, and it's affecting us taxpayers. Would you understand that?
Well, if you could be just a little bit more specific, we've got a lot of puzzled looks here.
I'm a little too upset to be specific, being a patriotic veteran and a heterosexual.
Okay, well,
thank you. But that's about all I can think of right now.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call, and I hope things get better for you.
Chuck, always remember, all policy or proposed policy changes at the end of the day lie at the governor's feet, because that individual has to sign. So all of them, always lies at the governor's feet. Because if that individual doesn't sign, it doesn't become a policy. So, and she is, that's the executive branch, so the governor is in charge of all the departments. And all the department heads work at the will of the governor. If she doesn't like what's going on in a department, she can instantly remove that person, put somebody else in. So the policies, the rulemaking, everything always lies at the governor, because no matter what the legislature does, the governor has to sign.
All right. So it's all her fault. So we've just absolved ourselves. We're all completely innocent here. Not a bad way to go. We're down to about our last 6 minutes here. Gentlemen, are there areas that we needed to talk about and haven't done yet? Andreas, I want to pull you back in here. When you submitted your name to be appointed as county commissioner, were there areas that you were most concerned about?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the economic health of the county is extremely important, and we definitely don't want to get to a position where we have expenditures that exceed our income. And just like the other commissioners, my colleagues here, I think that's something that we need to prepare for. It's coming. We know it's coming. So there needs to be some serious savings that need to happen countywide with all the departments. I think that's really important, not just in the county, but it also reflects that we need to be responsible as citizens. And you and I, we balance our checkbook. We make sure that we have enough revenue to cover our expenses. The county needs to do the same thing. And as has been mentioned before, we can see the writing on the wall. The revenue is going down and down and down, and we don't want to get caught flat-footed. So being responsible with the money of the county is extremely important.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Andreas. Gentlemen, any other areas that you're dealing with on a daily basis? I know we've got a brief meeting tomorrow, business session. There's not much on the agenda. We're examining some zone changes for a residential development. Is that accurate?
Yes. I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll be stepping out of that part of the meeting just due to a potential conflict of interest. And so the two commissioners will be taking care of that.
All right, Herman, are you familiar with what's going to be happening tomorrow? And is it a residential development? How many residences are we talking about? What's the general area?
That's all I know. I haven't had time to look at it, and I'm sure the map will be at our counter by the time we get back today.
It's on the website.
Yeah, it wasn't there yesterday, so I didn't see it. So, you know, it's pretty standard. We do this stuff all the time. And so it's just improvement of a subdivision, I think, isn't it?
It's the Don Marvin
K&D Enterprises or something like that.
Oh, that's been appealed, and this has been going back and forth. Okay, so it's the Don Marvin. So this is somebody that wanted to to subdivide their land and to build houses. And Thousand Friends of Oregon appealed it because it said it's a forestry zone. And but now you have the experts on both sides. One says it's a forestry zone. The other one says it's not conducive to growing trees and everything. So we're in this. But I'll tell you what, almost every subdivision that has any natural resources, Thousand Friends of Oregon appeals it to LUBA all the time. And we make a decision, you know, and we say no. Let the individual go forward. You didn't prove that this is good soil type for growing trees. Thousand Friends of Oregon appeal it every time. And it costs these people money. So to continue on, it's crazy, Chuck, how this system works. Statewide land use planning is absolutely horrible. And it's exclusive to Oregon. Other states don't do it like this.
All right. Andreas, you have some real estate background. You want to weigh in on this one?
Yeah, I think Commissioner Burtschager is 100% correct. I believe it was 50 years ago when Senate Bill 100 was passed in the Senate, and that was a total disaster for Oregon. It was so bad that the other states looked at it and said, we're not going there. It's really bad.
Okay, let me see here. I've got about 3 minutes left, so I'll give you each 1 minute. Andreas, this is your first time here. Response? What do you think? You've got a minute to talk about what we're doing here and what you're doing for the commissioners.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. Looking forward to serving the citizens of Josephine County. I've been at the job for about 1 month now. Lots to learn, lots to read. I know a little bit of the back history, what's been happening on the county on the other side of the dais or outside of the office of the commissioners. And so looking at it on the inside is very different, but I'm excited and I'm looking forward to serving the citizens as best I can.
Oh, all right. Well, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Mr. Burtschager, take 60 seconds here. Let us know how you really feel about it.
I'm going to. So we talk a lot of negativity when we come to the radio show, but I'm going to talk about something positive. This is one of the best places to live, despite all this political fluff that we talk about all the time. Early this morning, I met my son out at the field at daybreak to set irrigation pipe, and the dogs were running, chasing the geese, and it was a beautiful, crisp morning. It was just gorgeous. And we looked at each other, and he said, you know what? It doesn't get much better than this. Thanks, Chuck.
All right. Well, there's your positive spin, and it is a gorgeous place to live. Mr. West.
So I want to go somewhere totally different. I want to thank our Tamara Martin, our fair director, and Jen McGowan, Josephine County Youth and Ag, and every single parent that helped make the livestock program what it is today. It was fabulous. I think they raised $800,000+. Just wonderful. There's so many parents and kids involved and citizens. The Active Club, they do so much. I'm probably going to forget somebody, so I really don't want to. I want to thank everyone who's been involved. And we're going to have a great, great time next year.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you very much. And we'll look forward to seeing you all in another 4 weeks here, the last Thursday of the month. And
Chuck, $860,000 the livestock auction brought to kids this year in Josephine County. You tell me that's a failed program, and it has nothing to do with 4-H.
Okay. All right. There you have it. Thank you very much, gentlemen. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We invite your ears to stick around here for Alex Bauer will be in to take you right after the news. That's upcoming right here on KAJO Radio. In partnership.